liberty in our lifetimes in a free state of our own. That's the vision, that's the dream, and we are building it in New Hampshire. I'm Eric Brakey, your host and renegade statesman for the Porcupine Report. Welcome to your source for porcupine news and free-range conversation on matters of liberty. All right, let's hop into the show. Hello there, everyone. Glad to be here with you this evening for episode 9 of the Porcupine Report. Of course, I'm your host, your renegade statesman, executive director of the Free State Project in New Hampshire, Eric Brakey. It's good to have you here with us. I'm looking forward to the great conversation we're going to have today on episode 9. Before we get into it with our wonderful guest, Olga Sorens, who I'll be welcoming onto the program very shortly, I want to tell you about actually one of the events our guest today is a co-producer on. We're going to be talking about this event. We're also going to be talking about some other things. I'm looking forward to the conversation, but let me tell you up front, and you know it's coming because I tell you every single episode, that now is the time to get your tickets to the Porcupine Freedom Festival, also known by its shorthand as Porkfest. It is June 17th through the 23rd at Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire. This is a family-friendly Freedom Festival. Ron Paul will be Zooming in virtually over the interwebs to be with us, and so many other great speakers will be Zooming in their cars coming to Lancaster, New Hampshire. They'll be physically Zooming in to be there in person with us. With 2,000 of your favorite libertarians, you get to go camping with all of them, including people like Scott Horton, Gene Epstein, Jeffrey Tucker, James Bovard, David Friedman, and so many more. Maybe even you and your friends and your family. So come on out and join us at the Porcupine Freedom Festival. It's not to be missed. Bring your friends, bring your family. I did mention this is a family-friendly Freedom Festival. Over 400 kids were in attendance last year alone. I mean, it just goes to show people are bringing their families. So if you got a family, they're going to fit right in. Reserve your campsite while supplies last. Campsites are in limited supply, and tickets are also likely to sell out. This has sold out in recent years. It's likely to sell out again. Go to porkfest.com. That's pork with a C, not with a K, just like your dear host, Eric Brakey. My name is spelled with a C, not with a K. Don't get that wrong. And don't get it wrong when you're going to porkfest.com. If you go to porkfestwithak.com, I don't know what you're going to find. Best case scenario, you'll get delicious barbecue, but you won't find the family-friendly Freedom Festival you're looking for, because that will be at pork with a C, porkfest.com. Get your tickets, get your campsites. Don't miss out. And to talk about that, and so many other things for our conversation this evening, I am so glad to welcome to the show someone who I've gotten to know a little bit since I've come on board with the Free State Project. She is a can-do person. She is a co-producer for the Porcupine Freedom Festival, but she's got a fantastic story of her own journey to freedom of her own. We're going to be talking with her tonight. Her name is Olga Sorens. Olga, welcome to the Porcupine Report. No, you're muted. I can't hear you right now. There you go. I can hear you.
Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be here with you tonight.
Thank you so much for coming on, Olga. Well, I'm trying to think where to begin. I mean, obviously, you're a co-producer for Porkfest. We'll be talking about that at some point during things here. But probably let's, I always like to start a conversation for us all to like get to know our guests and get to know their story. I mean, we all have different stories that brought us to where we are today, fighting for freedom and liberty in the free state of New Hampshire. Some of us have moved in the course of our lifetimes to come to the free state from smaller distances. Some people are moving from Maine right next door. Some people have come from other parts of the country. But you yourself, like your story starts in another part of the world, under a, as you've told me, under a communist regime. under the Soviet Union. And so I'd love to tell us a little bit about that. Like, what was it like growing up in Ukraine under the communist regime?
Well, the first thing I want to tell you is I was born in a beautiful city. It's called Odessa, Ukraine. It is a port city. It has gorgeous beaches. It has theaters. It has a lot of culture. And growing up, we didn't think much about what we didn't have. We often thought a lot about what we did have. And as a kid, I experienced it all with fresh eyes. So I think the hardest thing for people to grasp is the differences of opportunity you have here in the United States that are absolutely incredible. We grew up in, apartment buildings, often multi-generational living. We enjoyed it to the extent that you can enjoy having three families in a two-bedroom. But it was also a lot of fun and a lot of joy. I remember that my family used to love to read, to play games, to do a lot of different things that families all over the world do. But what I remember most is how specific the expectations of us were outside the home. So, for example, when you went to school, you wore a very particular uniform, which for girls consisted either of a navy blue dress or a brown dress with an apron. When you raise your hand at school, you had to sit perfectly still and you raise your hand like this. And so you were taught to behave in very particular ways, and everybody was taught the same. And the more that you did, you were only allowed to individuate in very particular circumstances in the way that was deemed sort of approved and culturally accepted of.
It was a very, very kind of everyone was expected to conform to these collective, I guess, standards.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way to think about it. And, you know, as a young person, you realize it in small measures, right? So I think adults think of collectivism as something grand and big and scary. As a kid, you recognize it when you need to learn something a bit differently than other people. I'm, for example, much more of an auditory learner than a visual learner. Mm-hmm. People don't make adjustments for things like that where I'm from. I think if you wanted to do something differently, so when I started out, I was a lefty. I wrote with my left hand. That was not a good thing. So I was in various somewhat terrible ways retaught to write with my right hand, which if you've ever seen my handwriting, it's absolutely horrific. But these small little measures of, you know, where you can self-express, what you can do, how you can behave, they kind of come as a given, but little by little, you're sort of taught how the world works there and how to follow the rules so that you don't individuate too much, don't step out of line too much, don't speak too loudly, definitely don't have different opinions than what you're being taught or question a lot of the powers that be, whether that be, you know, your preschool teacher or somebody at an adult at the store. You're supposed to behave and have conversations in a particular way. Now, that wasn't necessarily true in my community. So I don't want to make it sound so authoritarian that we had quite a joyous community. And, you know, my background is I am a Russophone Jewish person from Odessa, Ukraine. So that is a very particular sect in a community. And the experience of Jewish people in Odessa is quite unique. At the time that I was growing up there, it was pretty much of an epicenter. And my parents grew up, really exposing us to a lot of literature, a lot of great art, music. My mom was a violinist. She played at the opera house. So we learned to be creative in private ways. And we learned to share with family and friends. We used to have discussions. We used to have debates. So I feel very lucky about, regardless of the general, I would guess, aesthetic all around, I feel very lucky about the family that I had and how I was able to grow up.
You know, it is, I mean, it is interesting that I only know very little about Russian and Ukrainian culture. But it has been always striking, I guess, to think back on just out of this region, some of the great kind of works of art and theater and dance. And I mean, the really amazing culture that has come out of this part of the world. Though I imagine to some degree that as kind of different authoritarian regimes kind of took over, it probably had I would imagine it didn't have a very great effect on that. But still, I think there's some amazing culture over there. Now, for you in your journey, how you were in Ukraine until how old? How much of your life did you spend over there?
93. My dad likes to say he waited exactly 7 years and 10 months and 1 day until he was allowed to leave. and he immigrated earlier than us. Basically it was really difficult for certain groups to actually leave. So yeah. You may have heard the term refuseniks in the past, right? And people interpret that quite differently. Some people interpret it as those who refuse and those who are refused, right? Those are the two different definitions of it. So for a long time, different groups of people, and this doesn't just apply to Jewish people, there are many different groups, were not allowed to leave. They were deemed to either, you know, for a variety of reasons. Either they were too close to what the state considered state secrets or a whole slew of a bunch of other reasons that they just weren't allowed to leave. So it was really, really difficult. And at the same time, those typically tend to be the people that were dissident, that valued individuality, that valued free speech, that valued property, which we didn't have anything, right? You were assigned an apartment to live in, and that's what you had, a certain square meter space that, depending on the size of your family, that's how you were allotted space, basically. It kind of became an interesting thing because people started speaking out. And there was a massive state suppression in many ways of certain cultural practices, religious practices. There was also a definite tendency to group people as one. You know, people weren't really treated as individuals. They were treated as groups. And I'll give you a great example of a story my dad always reminds me of. When applying to college, there was a questionnaire, right? And the questionnaire basically said, what is your background? And box one said Russian Ukrainian. And box two said Jewish. And box three said other. So my dad said, I just wrote yes.
Those are the only three categories. Wow.
Those were the three categories on the questionnaire. And our folks went to a very particular high school, and there was only one university around, which was, and I'm probably not going to translate it correctly, but it's the Odessa Technological Institute of Refrigeration or something to that extent. I'm not sure if it's even called that anymore. So there became, depending on what what part of the country you were in, there were very specific places you could go. So he's like, okay, refrigeration engineer I am. from there on, people were tracked on lists. So you graduated from this particular university, you were somehow ended up on some lists that were distributed to employers, and all of a sudden you couldn't get specific types of jobs. You were limited not only in career paths, but places of work. That led my dad to end up, after not being able to get specific types of work, he ended up having to go to Siberia. And because of the educational structure, a lot of folks in those particular areas ended up in specific places.
Now, was that, do you suspect that was particularly because you were a Jewish family as compared to, I guess the other option was to be Ukrainian Russian? It seems like if those they kind of segment you into.
It is. A segment is the correct word, right? And, people really, really like to subdivide in groups, and specifically groups that questioned, that were, in many ways educated a particular way, ended up being stuck in one particular category. And you can try as hard as you want. You can't, you can never leave, so to speak. That being said, it led people to get very, very creative. As far as trying to create opportunities for their kids, as far as trying to, imagine the business they would have, imagine how they could sustain their family and what interesting side hustles they could come up with to provide a different kind of future for their kids.
Now you said that you left in 1993. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So that's just about the time that the Soviet Union is collapsing.
Yes.
And you must have still been very young at that age.
I was. It was kind of a strange and scary time. There was definitely like a military presence that I remember vaguely. There was a time where I remember my grandmother at the time kind of trying to understand what is happening with the money that she had saved, right? Currencies were changing with weeks. There were rubles, there were coupons, there was like griva, there was like a whole different slew of stuff happening. I didn't pay attention to the name, so I may misname correctly, but I remember a sort of a state of confusion and panic that kind of occurred during that time. And I think that is what I remember most is people had families that were spread across the border. So you could have, a mom and dad that were in Odessa with their kids living in Moscow. This was very, very typical. Odessa was kind of like almost a southern resort town in a way. It was pretty cosmopolitan. And people had questions like, how is this going to work? Am I going to need different paperwork? Like, what are we going to be issued? Like, how do I travel between places? It was a state of confusion. And now that, as I look back at the pictures and I remember some of the things when we were leaving, how my grandmother was so panicked, I didn't understand why. I'm like, oh, we're just going to Moscow. No big deal. Like, this is just temporary. I didn't really understand the gravity of what she was experiencing, which is entirely the unknown. Like, your world's basically falling apart. Your family could be separated for a really long time. Mm. And I think a lot of families on both sides of that border right now, to a much more horrible degree, are experiencing just that.
Yeah. Well, I imagine with current events and with do you still have family in Ukraine these days?
I did at the beginning of the war. Yes. I had a cousin and his young family. They were still in Odessa. they had to leave. So they evacuated Odessa. They left pretty much everything behind. They had to even basically leave their car at the border as.
But they got out. They got out safe.
To take the car. So they left without the car, you know. And they spent some time trying to figure out, actually all of us for some time, spent some time trying to figure out how to get them out. And they did make it out. They are unfortunately not to the United States because the immigration system here is not so easy for apparently Ukrainian refugees. So they're actually in Canada right now.
Okay. Well, I'm glad they made it out safe. It's certainly not something that can be said for everyone over there. With your experience growing up in Ukraine and watching current events, I mean, I guess what are you thinking as you watch what's been unfolding in recent years? And maybe you see kind of places in the headlines that are places maybe you once traveled or spent time in when you were a little girl. How do you take all that in?
I don't think there's a lot of words I can come up with that describe this feeling. First was a lot of pain, a lot of sadness. Then came worry. How do we do this? How do we get people out? How do we help people? I think now my main thing as I watch things unfold and as I read various accounts of it is I think in the politics of the war machine, what ends up getting lost is the humanity that is absolutely struggling in that place. It wasn't a very like wealthy, well-to-do place to begin with, although it was, as I described, kind of rich in other ways. But the absolute destruction and the separation of families, close and extended, that ended up on different sides of this conflict, the human toll that's been taken there is like absolutely devastating. And I often, you know, look at posts of there's a great Ukrainian artist that lives nearby right in Bedford, New Hampshire as well. My kids take art lessons from her. Mm-hmm. And it is constant worry. I think for the first couple of months, we probably slept 2 hours a night. We were absolutely glued to Telegram, WhatsApp, whatever, however we could reach people. And I think at some point we started texting okay with a question mark because like, okay, meaning, are you alive? You know, because so much time has been spent on trying to get every detail. Where is your car moving? What's happening? Where are the kids? Are you together? What's the next steps? Paperwork. These crazy things. But after the craziness kind of escalated on both ends, you just end up hoping that they're alive. And that is a feeling that to me is indescribable. Like, I don't know. It's something.
I know when I have a friend who's going through a hard time and I don't hear from them for a little while, it's like, that's the one thing I want. Just like, hey, can I get like a sign of life that you're still out there that, you know, and I can only imagine like for someone you care about and love, who's in an active war zone, you know, moment to moment, it's hard to, you know, I can only imagine. I guess we could go kind of one or two directions now. One, I'd be curious just to know, as someone who, for myself, someone who's intensely curious about this part of the world right now, intensely curious about perspectives on what's happening there, and kind of the lead up to all this. I'm certainly interested in like whatever perspectives you have as someone who grew up there and kind of like how we got into this mess. But also, if you want to talk about that, I would love to hear your perspective there. But also, I do want to hear about like your transition, right? You came over, so you left in 93. Did you come straight to the United States, or did you, were there other places in between?
I did. I came right to the United States. And we ended up in a place called Franklin, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And
so you went from being under a communist regime to under a Massachusetts regime, which is, I guess, to some degree an improvement, but not being in New Hampshire.
Yeah. And I mean, at that time, Massachusetts was a bit different as well, I think. though, I think for me, it was a big culture shock. It was kind of disorienting, but I felt like, you know, I wake up in the morning, and we lived in this condo, right? And the condo faced out to this nice little green area with like a stream going by. And I would just like walk out and I would be like, this is completely surreal. Like, this is not real, right? Like, you can go anywhere, you can ride your bike anywhere, you can, you can go to a bookstore and buy whatever book you want. There's like, you go to these supermarkets and they were like Disney World to me, like, they're huge, right? Like, how do you have like 10 different kinds of milk, people? Like, what is this craziness? But I think it was a shock. And, you know, I was definitely in shock a little while, but my parents did a really great thing for me, which is they insisted I learn English right away.
Yeah.
And because of that, I was able to kind of start working my way into the world here pretty quickly. And I just thought it was incredible. Like, I think one of the silliest things I ever did was I insisted on wearing my uniform to school, like my first day of school.
Your uniform that you brought with you from Ukraine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How did that go over?
So my mom like signed me up like to stay back a grade because she was so worried that like I couldn't catch up because of the language barrier and whatever. And so you can imagine a person coming with like a blue little button-up dress with a collar with an apron on to third grade. Like that went over really freaking terribly.
Like, You know, it's funny. I remember in 1993, and so I was, I guess, a few years behind you. I think I was in kindergarten in 1993, and I remember at my school, a Russian student had just immigrated here. So I guess this was the time that people were leaving and coming over. I guess, you know, the things were falling apart. All I remember, I don't remember him very well, but his name was Sasha, and I just remember him insisting that like Russia is so much better than the United States and how much better it was over there. And looking back on it, I wonder sometimes, it's like, you know, 5 years old, like, what do you know? I didn't know where Russia was, you know. But it's I guess it is just interesting to reflect that is a time that people were kind of coming over, and the challenges, especially young kids, have to that culture shock of what is it going to be like in this new place. And so so you wore your uniform to your first day of third grade in the United States. Were you able to make friends easily enough, maybe like after you ditched the uniform? Like, how was that?
I would say people were really welcoming at first. They were mostly interested in like, what is this? Like, who is this person? Like, what is she doing? And so they tried to communicate with me really proactively. And I was able to make a couple of friends, you know, fairly early on. And, you know, one of my friends, actually, I attribute to her pretty much teaching me English. Yeah. And what she did is she started showing me things like there was a cartoon called Tailspin at some point. I don't know if anybody remembers what that's like. And She really liked this one show that I hated, but I watched anyway, which was like Power Rangers or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I was a Power Rangers kid.
Yeah.
It was pretty terrible, but those were the 90s.
That's right. And I think that starting to kind of like experience those cultural aspects of someone else really made me feel a lot more at home. But that initial transition was really weird to me. Like I couldn't, there was a, you know, I couldn't just like go walk to wherever in a city. I was like in a suburbs, you had to drive places, right? Yeah. So there were little things like that that, you know, in some ways felt more constraining and in other ways were just different. The culture and the expectations were different. You know, we were taking the bus by ourselves since like first grade in Odessa, where people thought that would be like public transportation, you know, like there was no school bus. So I thought the bus thing was like the funniest thing. Like so there's a special bus.
So in some ways in Odessa, you learned to be independent as a child a lot sooner. But in America, we still have, you know, kind of the helicopter parenting, like, so I guess that's pretty interesting to think about that contrast, right? We're a culture that's built upon like independence, but we kind of protect our children from exerting that independence. Whereas, you're expected to conform, in Odessa, but you get that independence of it's a dangerous world out there, kid. You're going to have to learn one day.
Figure it out.
Well, and you survived. You're still standing here with us.
Still standing here. And I think some of the interest, you know, you had asked about the war before. And I think one of the interesting things about Porkfest, and I'll just mention this real quick, is we have a ton of really, really great speakers that talk about various aspects of that. And are going to be there holding some really excellent discussions as well. So if this is a topic that's interesting to you and how it impacts, you know, the lives of so many people, you know, Will Ruger is going to be there. And he is a really big policy expert and, you know, and talks about non-intervention and restraint. And we're going to have, you know, some other folks as well. Benjamin Abloh wrote about the West's impact on the war as well. And he will be there as well. So there are some folks that will be talking on this topic as well.
You know, it is, well, I'm looking forward to those talks, and I will say, you know, it is interesting. Like it used to be that kind of our relations with that part of the world of Eastern Europe was at the center of all of our kind of our foreign policy discourse in this country. And then the Soviet Union fell, and we kind of like for a couple decades, it kind of, you know, fell off the plate as we all learned an incredible amount about the Middle East and all the different kind of warring factions there as we get sucked into war after war after war in the Middle East. And now back, we're all trying to play catch up to be like, okay, well, what's actually been happening in Eastern Europe for the last several decades while we were, you know, not paying attention? And we were busy in the Middle East, but I say we weren't paying attention. I mean, certainly our government was up to things over there, I think the American public were often distracted by other things.
Yeah. I think there's a really excellent book, very inaptly. The title is very inaptly translated. I would say they translated to I Love Russia, and it's by a reporter named Yelena Kostuchenko, who used to work for Novaya Gazeta. And it's a book that just came out. The reason I say it's an aptly translated because it's really My Beloved Russia, which is meant as a, let me show you what's been happening and how a lot of the experience of those who sort of stood against certain things and who are systemically kind of experienced marginalization and erasure, like, let me show you what it's been like. And I've actually been listening to it on an audiobook going to and from work, but it's very interesting perspective and not one that you will get from either facet of the, I think, mainstream media that's out there for sure.
Well, that's definitely worth checking out, and worth checking out the great speakers that are going to be at the Porcupine Freedom Festival. I guess we can hop right into that. Of course, there's so much more I'd love to ask you about your, actually, before we get to Porcupine, I do just want to ask you, let's complete the journey, right?
So we've all covered, right, I'm with you. Let's do
we've
it.
Covered, we've covered your journey from living under the Soviet regime to coming to the U.S. as a young girl in third grade. You landed in Massachusetts. So that's your physical journey right across the country from a state of totalitarianism to a state of relative freedom. But what was your ideological journey? Like, how did you, I'm sure you're a libertarian now. Like, was there like an epiphany moment where you realized these ideals of liberty were what you believed in? Or what was your, as you got older, reflecting on lessons that you learned while you were under the Soviets? Like, what was your journey?
Well, I think mine is kind of a unique situation. I was highly influenced by my dad, who is a libertarian.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Good on him.
Yeah, it's on him. But I will say, you know, when I first came here, and even, somewhat into high school, I was still kind of like lost there a little bit. And I think there's always a time that you're like, well, my dad keeps saying this stuff and it's lame, all that. So you go into exploring it. But as I got it into college and started my career life, I really started seeing some of the same issues I grew up with kind of reverberate here and there. And so I think I really gravitated ultimately when I was first married with kids, and at the time husband's family was very liberal. And I noticed that at some points we were just speaking two very, very different languages. And I started exploring that more and more personally. I would read things. I would listen to audiobooks. I would listen to podcasts. And, you know, after a while, I found it was kind of an impasse. And so when I was a single mom and I was raising my girls, I started by teaching them to ask questions. Ask as many questions as you want. If I'm telling you a fact, please ask me why. Please ask me how come. Tell me the cool facts you learned, and let's figure out if they're real. We started implementing it that way. And then finally, obviously I met Jason. And at first when we met, I had no idea who he was or what the Free State Project was.
For those who don't know, Olga is married to Jason Sorens, who's the founder of the Free State Project, who we had on one of the earlier episodes of the show, which folks can go back and check out. It was a great conversation. Okay, enough context. Back to you.
Yeah. And I remember on one of our early dates, driving up to Porkfest, actually. And Porkfest. I didn't know much about it or his involvement or the extent of his involvement, but I knew very shortly after we got there that something was quite different because everybody seemed to know who he was and what he was doing. And so, of course, later I did my due diligence and said, wow, I should have Googled first, but I hadn't. It was.
That sounds like a real power move on his part to be like,
yeah, I mean, what
a way to impress.
Pretty
this,
much sealed
this
the deal
woman,
for me.
Right?
I had a great experience. It was actually 2020. It was COVID. It was crazy town everywhere.
Oh, that was the year Tom Woods came, right?
Yeah. I believe so. Yeah. And, I remember walking around the campground and just speaking to people and meeting people. And it's people that understood my language, that could easily accept where I was coming from on certain things, that you could bounce ideas off of, and you could disagree and it'd be okay. And you could sit there in front of the fire and disagree for about 2 hours and have a beer and meet each other for coffee in the morning. You know,
I figured it devolves into accusations that so-and-so is not a real libertarian.
maybe I didn't experience that.
Oh, either. All right. Well, good. All right. Maybe we've evolved a little bit in our social.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it depends on the medium, right?
Yeah. Maybe real life communication with people is better than like social media communication with people.
We can, I would say that 1,000%. And meet the libertarians in person. And, you know, what you see online is not complete, is what I would say. That there are people with multiple dimensions, and they may come off one way online, but when you meet them in person, wow, they're like wealth of knowledge, wealth of information, and really fun, you know, to talk to. And this is why it's so important that if you are considering signing up for the Free State Project, you should absolutely come to Porkfest, not just for the great speakers, but to meet the community, because there is a community for you here. It's just a matter of meeting them and finding them. It's the biggest concentration of liberty-minded people that I've ever been, in presence of. And Porkfest is just an amazing place to meet them, because you can go and you can listen to the talks, or you can sit and argue about ideas by the fire, or your families can play together on the playground. You can see all the awesome stuff they're making and selling and creating, and talk about their next project. There's rarely a person in this community that isn't in the middle of like 5 different projects that they're going 1,000% on. And I think that's amazing. I mean, I am still, every time I go to major events, I'm still in awe of this community. And I would really encourage people to come here and experience it, because I can't do it justice describing it.
Yeah. Porkfest really is what you make of it. And the beautiful thing is people make a lot of it. You know, there's a little bit of central planning, right? There is a bit of
to the extent that it's a private event and you have to make it happen.
right. There are people who have a little bit of a central plan, in the sense of like, here's what's going on the main stage, and we're kind of pulling off a big structure. But within that, people are starting their own startup hubs and their own businesses. And it's like what the FSP does is it creates this big environment that people can kind of make the most out of, and it's so amazing to see kind of the spontaneous order that exists at Porkfest and what people are building there. And so I didn't realize. So your first Porkfest was 4 years ago.
It was.
You are 4 years later. You are one of the two co-producers of Porkfest. And you are focusing in your role primarily on helping to do outreach to speakers and get folks to come out. You've mentioned a couple of folks already. Who are some other speakers that people would be really excited to hear are coming to Porkfest this year?
Well, first of all, I would certainly encourage people to go to porkfest.com and click on festivals and just drag on down to speakers, because a lot of them are listed here. Obviously, we've got Ron Paul, David Friedman, Jim Bovard. We have Lily Tang Williams, if you want to hear another very different perspective on surviving communism, right? She speaks about
Russian communism and Chinese communism. We've got survivors of both at Porkfest.
Yeah. We have Keith Ammon. We have Jeffrey Hahn, Catherine Benandon, Jody Shaw, who has a great story as well. Mark Randazza, Franklin, who talks about art, politics, and the limits of reason. Matt Barney, Kate Wan, for a very different perspective. And I do have a really special piece of news to share with you today.
All right. Wow, you didn't tell me this in advance. All right, what's the news?
I mean, everybody's heard Ron Paul is going to be joining us virtually and addressing as the keynote speaker. But we have another exciting speaker that's coming on board. and that is Spike Cohen. Will be joining us at Pork Fest on Saturday as well. He will be there Thursday through Saturday, living it up at Pork Fest. We're going to do a special Shoot with Spike event as well. So it's going to be a really exciting time. We're still filling out our schedule. You know, we're going to have the AIER folks there, Will Ruger, and a lot of folks from the community. We're really highlighting a lot of community members during this Pork Fest. We're recentering on New Hampshire, so you can learn a little bit more about what's going on here and how we are building your favorite phrase, Eric, which is our liberty homeland, right? I don't know why it hasn't stuck with me quite yet, but
we need a homeland, right? You know, we are other places. We are dismissed. We are trampled upon. We are ignored. We are a small part of the overall population, as far as, you know, libertarians go. Man, it's just amazing, you know, when you get concentration in one place like Pork Fest. But that's a, you know, microcosm for kind of overall kind of the effort in New Hampshire. It's amazing what is being built in the Liberty Homeland. And Pork Fest is one of those things. So, well, awesome. So I know I'm looking forward to it. I know that folks listening are looking forward to it. If they haven't gotten their tickets yet, do you think there's, it's probably not going to sell out, right? You know, they can just wait till like the last day.
I would not wait. And the almost early bird tickets at the price they're at are going very fast. I think we have something like 6 campsites and 30 RV sites left at Rogers Campground. So if you haven't gotten your tickets left yet, you should do that very quickly, because we're about to get busy. We're going to have tons of new speaker announcements coming out in the next couple of weeks. You know, we recently had Peter Earl as well, and it's going to keep adding every single day. And on top of it, you have all the great hub experiences. And what I always say is, if I miss someone and you want to invite someone, go ahead and host a hub, have a schedule, create a lounge, create something very, very special that you want to see as part of the festival. Because what the programming we do is to get the party started. You are the one that can create the experience that you really, really want there. And for the kids this year, we have awesome programming as well. Porcupines are going to have a petting zoo there.
I hadn't heard about the petting zoo.
There's a petting zoo with a real porcupine coming.
Are you allowed to pet the porcupine?
I am not going to promise that, nor am I sure I would recommend.
With a whole bunch of quills in your hand.
That's right. I know that they're planning on having, you know, like a clown on stilts coming there. I know you're going to be hosting some porcupine events as well, right, Eric?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We're going to be doing with the younger kids. I know I'm going to be doing a reading of the Tuttle Twins and the Creature from Jekyll Island, because, of course, you got to start the kids out early, knowing the danger of the Federal Reserve and that it must and should be destroyed. But then also for the older kids, I'm looking forward to doing, we're going to be doing something I've done with a lot of school students within my Senate district. I'll go into the classrooms and I'll do a mock legislature, which, you know, I'm always very happy when the public school students come up with an idea to like shrink government. Sometimes it's ideas to grow government and whatever, you know, I'm just there to teach them about the legislature. But I suspect I'm not going to have to worry with the young people at Pork Fest that they're going to be coming up with an idea to pass mandatory this or that, right? It's going to be like probably a race to see who can like abolish the most, you know, government agencies the fastest. I'm going to look forward to seeing what these young people come up with for bill proposals and going through like the process, how a bill becomes a law and the legislative process and all that. I know that we don't like government, but we do want to learn the systems so that we can use the systems to promote liberty. So I'm looking forward to getting hands on with.
And we couldn't do all of this great programming without sponsors. Specifically, we have a great speaker and sponsor from Brownstone, Jeffrey Tucker. We have AIER sponsoring as well, and a couple of others, all of which we'll be tweeting about and including on our website. And we are really grateful that they're sponsoring Porkfest this year, because this allows us to continue to do the great programming and keep the momentum going on this great event as well. And I know my awesome team is going to keep working as well. Constance, my co-producer, is doing a lot of hard work with trying to decentralize the management of hub schedules and allow folks to manage their own schedules and times. And she'll be talking about that separately. But we have lots of awesome people on my team. I couldn't do this job without them. I'd like to just name them, if that's okay.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, Miranda and Alex Baer, Tim Bauman, Tyler Brown, Dr. D, who's going to be doing our free aid tent this year, Shanna Gary, Karen, Chris Lopez, of course, the one and only, and Sean Parizo, David Wilson, all of these great folks. And I'm probably missing some because there are so many awesome volunteers that make this happen. I know that there are going to be additional volunteer opportunities. This is a 100% volunteer run event.
And I'm blown away when I sit in on these organization meetings kind of once a week, and I just get to sit back and listen, because like people are just doing so much work to bring this event together. So I'm learning a lot from everyone, and thank you for the work that you're doing. Of course, I'm looking forward to having Constance, who's the lead producer on Porkfest. I'm looking forward to having her on as we get closer to the event, talk more about Porkfest, because we won't let people forget that they need to get their tickets. So we are getting close to the end of time. So we've covered a lot of ground from communism to Porkfest. I want to give you the final word.
I'm going to say, if you've never been, if you're thinking about New Hampshire, come. You're not going to regret it. It is an absolutely awesome experience. And there's nowhere in the world like New Hampshire. Trust me, I've been a lot of places.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Olga. I'm going to close up the show with our audience. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Last word. So we've talked about Porkfest, and you absolutely should get your ticket for the Porcupine Freedom Festival while supplies last. That, as we've mentioned, that's going to be June 17th through the 23rd. Now, I want to also announce, after you've gotten your ticket for the Porcupine Freedom Festival, if you so happen to be ready to go to another festival afterwards in another part of the country, the Free State Project is going to be on the main stage at Freedom Fest this year, which is going to be in Las Vegas from July 10th through the 13th. Now, I'm primarily here promoting Porkfest. I want you to get your Porkfest ticket first. But once you've done that, the folks at Freedom Fest, we're really grateful that they're having us. They're going to put us on the main stage to be able to promote what we're doing with the FSP, maybe recruit some new freedom-loving movers to New Hampshire. But that's going to take place July 10th through the 13th. And the organizers there asked me to let you know that their early bird discount for their tickets is ending on March 31st, which is just a few days away. So once you grab your tickets for Porkfest, you can then also go to freedomfest.com and learn more and snag some tickets there. And I will look forward to seeing you if you are able to go. I'll look forward to seeing you in Vegas this July as we sell the Liberty Homeland we're building here in New Hampshire. All right, everyone. I want to thank our guest, Olga Sorens, for joining us on the show and for speaking with us about her journey both across the world and her philosophical journey to liberty. And I also want to thank our technical producer, Justin O'Donnell, who, as always, is running everything behind the scenes and making us look so nice and the audio sounds so crisp and Really grateful for his work helping to make this happen. And that's the show, everyone. Furthermore, my opinion is the Federal Reserve should be destroyed. I'll talk with you all next week.